this side. All right, very good. Well, welcome to our village board meeting for October 11th at 7 o'clock. I'd ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Faulkner.
Here.
Trustee Gonzalez.
Here.
Trustee
Vasquez. Here.
Trustee
here.
Johnson.
Here.
Tunnel.
Here.
Lucy.
Here. Okay, if I can ask someone to stand and pray the Pledge of Allegiance.
The United States of America, and the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. We've got a few comments. I can ask you to come to the podium now, or when we get to the, it will be hopefully not too long. You want to come to the podium now for your citizen's comment on item 7A, or do you want to wait till we get to that section? And then Margie, you're next. So. We're easy here, whatever you like. Would you like us to wait?
Can I go now?
Yes, of course. Okay, please.
Margie Seconder, 531 River Oaks Drive. I sent an email to Jeff Loester late this afternoon, and I wanted to make my comments to you all as well. It's regarding the sewer lateral repair reimbursement program. Why did the village ordinance change in 2011 to be the property owner's responsibility up to the main sewer line? John Anderson had stated at an earlier board meeting. What did it specify before? But most residential buyers in town did not order a camera inspection of sewer laterals during a home inspection. About half of today's buyers even order it. In the background section on the program, the October 11th, page 2, as some village sewers are separated, as in the NSMP, the North Side Sewer Management Plan, are they not separated, and are there others in town? And if so, could the document please state so? Some properties share a lateral line, like the townhouses on West Lake Street. Are there others? Reimbursement for repairs on those properties should extend farther and should be greater than for properties with laterals connecting directly to the main sewer. A piece of the program should be clear communication to residents that they are obligated for ongoing maintenance, which the document does point out, but I don't think residents clearly hear that, that there is a risk to the owner of at least 75% of the line. I got my survey out and calculated. I live on a fairly narrow street, and my house sits fairly close to the road, but I have 100% risk from the curb to my home. And that equates to 75% of the entire line. So the village is looking at a subsidy on 25% from, I assume the sewer's in the middle of the road, I don't know that, to the curb. So a fairly small risk to the village, sizable risk to the homeowner. The homeowner could incur much higher risks than the $10,000 to $15,000 used in the example, because that was for roadway repair. And I don't know how that would adjust, but houses on the 500 and 600 block of Keystone have a much longer run. So you would think their costs could be much higher. And the document might mention that as well. Since the village reimbursed 100% of the repair costs for the owners on the 1400 block of Monroe, the village should consider equity to all residents. Prior residents who funded their own, as well as later residents who might get reimbursed. I want to make a couple comments about other items. The bike disposal plan, there's like 43 bikes that are going to be disposed of. If you could put that in your newsletter, people read the newsletter. I think it would be really helpful. A lot of parents don't know their kids' or serial numbers on the bikes, and they don't know where their kids' bikes are. Okay. And also, I had asked for earlier, some months ago, resident input into the new village manager. I know, I believe there's a search on. I noticed Oak Park is opening that to village input. I would like that as well. And I think you'll hear that from other residents as well. Thank you so much.
Okay. Margie. Try to answer some of those questions as we get to item 8A. Next up, since Bob, you're going to wait till we get, You want to wait? Well, we've got, on here, I don't know, Mark, are you on, or Kyle, are you on?
I am.
Okay, we're in citizens' comments, so I'll let you, since it's not your normal, regular scheduled update, we would normally have it on the agenda. I think you agreed to give a brief update. And ask for
Trustee Brennan asked us.
So go ahead, Mark.
Sorry, Trustee Brennan asked us to be on if we had any updates for this week. For this meeting. And so, yeah, we been fortunate to get another sale, which brings us to 55%, so above 50%, which is one of our threshold goals. And that was a penthouse unit, so a high price point unit, as well as another buyer has expressed interest in actually joining two of the penthouse units, and those discussions continue. So we've had some good progress in the last 2 weeks related to sales.
Other than that, okay, Mark, I appreciate the update, and I'm glad you were able to get another sale. So we'll move on to, I think that ends kind of the comments section for citizens. So we'll move on to elected official comments and announcements. Go ahead. I see Andrew DeMarco, who's the principal of St. Luke's, is on. Andrew, you there? Anyway, okay, there you are.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, we can't see you, but we can hear you. So, Andrew, at this time, I'm going to go ahead and do the resolution honoring the 100th anniversary of St. Luke's School. If you then can maybe say a few words after I read the resolution and we vote on the resolution, and then you can say a few words. So here it is. This is the resolution honoring the 100th anniversary of St. Luke's School. So whereas in 1921, four Sinsinawa Dominican sisters traveled from the Sinsinawa Mound in southwestern Wisconsin to teach at a new Catholic elementary school in River Forest, located on Lake Street and Ashland Avenue. And whereas in October 1921, the red brick single-story school building known as St. Luke School first opened its doors to students in grades 1 through 8, graduating 9 students in its first class of 1922. And whereas in 1956, construction was completed on the new school building, standing in place of the original, accommodating a steadily growing student enrollment. And whereas St. Luke School has had a long record of academic excellence, received the U.S. Department of Education's coveted National Blue Ribbon Award for academic excellence in 1991 and again in 2012. And whereas as St. Luke School commences its 100th year anniversary, they will continue to challenge young people to nurture faith, pursue knowledge, and develop strength, as well as work hard, give back to the world, and know that their lives have a purpose. And whereas St. Luke School has been a long-standing and well-respected institution within the village of River Forest, and the village looks forward to celebrating this important milestone with current students, staff, alumni, and the community. And now, therefore, it be resolved by the Village President and the Board of Trustees of the Village of River Forest, Cook County, Illinois, that the Board, for its members and the residents of the Village of River Forest, extend its congratulations and sincerest gratitude to St. Luke's School upon the celebration of its 100th anniversary. Present this resolution as a symbol of gratitude for the high quality of academic excellence and community service which it has rendered. So I ask now for the clerk. There was one. Yeah, we need a motion. All right. I get a motion in a second.
A motion.
A resolution honoring the 100th anniversary of St. Luke's.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Johnson? O'Connell?
Yes.
Faulkner?
Yes.
So it passes. I also see Sheila Price on. Hi, Sheila. So congratulations on a well-deserved and hard-earned anniversary. How wonderful it is to say that anything is here for 100 years. So congratulations on behalf of. In charge of development at St. Luke's. If you want to say a few words, you can so now. If not, no worries.
Well, just thank you. I am it's only my second year here at St. Luke and in the village of River Forest, but we are certainly thrilled to be celebrating 100 years of Catholic education. And we thank you all for your continued support. And we look forward to many, many more years of Catholic education and educating our young students of River Forest and our surrounding neighborhoods. So thank you.
So we will get this, we have a plaque here with the resolution signed by myself and the clerk, and we will make sure that this gets to you tomorrow so that you can hang it up and proudly hang it up. So thank you again. Okay, so let's move on to elected officials' comments and whatever concerns. So I'll go ahead and start with Bob.
Okay, I hope everyone is having been a great weather a couple of weeks, so hope everybody's out taking advantage of it. I don't like to mix my business with my survey on the board, but I think all the trustees received an email from McDonald's and our government relations department over the past couple of days. So it's one of those things that I'm really proud of to work for a company that does things like this. But I'm reaching out to all of our educators in town and letting them know that as a minor token of McDonald's appreciation of all you do for our kids in education, that educators can go into McDonald's this week and have a free breakfast on us. And I hope they take advantage of that because they do such a great job with our kids. And so thank you for letting me just kind of have that little plug because I think it's really important and they do a great job. And we really respect and what they do and for our community. So thank you. All I got.
Well, and thank you to McDonald's for that generous offer to our educators. They're very important. Ken?
I'll just keep it brief. I just want to wish all the residents a happy fall season and encourage them to avail themselves of all the rules and regulations regarding Halloween to ensure that not only they're in compliance, but they are celebrating in a safe way.
I wanted to recognize that today is Indigenous Peoples Day. And as of now, 14 states and the District of Columbia and over 130 cities and a growing number of school districts all recognize and celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day in place of or in addition to Columbus Day. And this is the first year where our U.S. president has officially recognized. I also wanted to mention what a nice event we had on Saturday, the Maywood Fine Arts Pumpkin Patch Walk for Equity and Opportunity in the Arts. This event brought together the villages of Maywood and River Forest, walking together from Maywood to River Forest and then back from River Forest to Maywood to support equity and opportunity in the arts. In particular, I think Cheryl Cardew, who's been a longtime supporter of the Maywood Fine Arts, and Erica Bachner helped make this happen. And I wanted to thank Public Works also, who helped us set it up in the Keystone Park and River Forest. Last thing is that I had the privilege today of joining in the first Truth and Racial Healing Transformation workshop or meeting of the 2021-2022 academic year, hosted by Dominican. And it was really interesting to hear the reports from all the different working groups. And I'm looking forward to joining one of the working groups and representing the village. I have one question, and I guess this might be for Lisa or Sarah. That is, I'm starting to get information about events and workshops that Dominican is hosting, and I'm not sure if there's a certain protocol or rule for what should be going on the village calendar or not.
Ask John if you want to address it. You're welcome to send that information.
We do look at things on a case-by-case basis. Typically, we try to reserve spaces on our channels and on the calendar. In River Forest or directly for River
Forest. I sounds like they would, so I'll pass them along as I.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I also want to wish everybody a happy and safe Halloween. And regarding an update, October the 7th, the Mayor's Metropolitan Caucus relating to the Age Friendly Collaborative met, and it's chaired by our Mayor, Aducey, and I also participate as a member. So the update that I'd like to give is there was a presentation from the Paul Institute for Housing Studies doing a general research on housing issues. However, Jeff Smith from DePaul did come to our collaborative because he was interested in getting specific feedback relating to our seniors meaning in all of the municipalities, not just the River Forest. So we're going to be putting a small committee together, a little task force, to try to provide him some specific issues that he should be incorporating as part of his study on housing, so that the older adults issues can also be addressed. We also received a presentation from the Village of Arlington Heights regarding their study, their survey, and an action plan process that they were working on. And of course, this special project, and we always have a special project for everyone. The topic for this meeting was walkability, and all the issues related to walkability regarding all municipalities. We broke out in two breakout rooms to really raise the issues that each of the municipalities have as it relates to our seniors in terms of walkability. We went from lighting to sidewalks to streets, and some of these we've already addressed in River Forest, which I was happy to hear, but there's more to follow up with it because we ran out of time. That's how extensive breakout room. So more to come. Our next meeting is scheduled for December 1st.
Thanks for us. Lisa?
I attended an event, a different one. The River Forest, the Village of River Forest had their open house. Saturday in attendance was police department did bike registration and gave information about how to collect information about your children in a private place in case identified. The fire department gave out a lot. They had big trucks and all the kids were very excited about those big trucks. Mm-hmm. Public Works also had another big truck. Again, the kids were very excited about that. The 9/11 Dispatch Center was there. And then NICOR was there sharing information about their joint program with ComEd focused on improving home energy efficiency. And I really do encourage, they gave out a wealth of information, and I truly believe every resident should take advantage of their free home energy efficiency study. They will come to it. A neighbor of mine has done it, and my husband, who's a home inspector, was really impressed with what they did. This past weekend, a colleague from work said, who do I reach out to do a home, to look at energy efficiency in my home? And we recommended that they start with, and it's NICOR and ComEd combined. To all who were represented and really made for a really great event for the residents of, our town. Not only do they have fun, but I think they learned a lot about the village and the different services provided by the village and what they can do to support. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lisa. Hello, everyone. I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwe, the Chippewa, the Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native peoples, stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live in. I, too, want to say happy Indigenous Peoples Day to everyone. And I thought I would take this opportunity to just do a recap of what a land acknowledgement is and why we do it. Land acknowledgement is a formal statement that recognizes and respects people who are Indigenous as traditional stewards of the land and an enduring relationship that exists between Indigenous peoples and their traditional territory. And the reason why we recognize the land is to recognize the land as an expression of gratitude and appreciation to those whose territory we reside on, and a way of honoring the Indigenous people who've been living and working on the land from time immemorial. It is important to understand the longstanding history that has brought us to reside on this land and to seek to understand our place within that history and take care of our community with that in mind. That came from Dominican University and Northwestern University, information about that. I did want to also put out there books that people can, or movies that people can watch, documentaries. So there's a movie called Rumble, The Indians Who Rocked the World, and that celebrates Native American contributions to the rock world in this documentary. There is a movie called Wind River, and it's inspired by the thousands of stories of sexual assault on women in the reservations, and it has many Native actors in the movie, and I think this is actually to the domestic violence that we are experiencing this month as well. There's an older movie as well called Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. And I want to also, I think I've mentioned this book before, but Reflections, A History of River Forest by Harriet Hausman is a wonderful place to start with River Forest history and the first chapter book and some of their history. So I do want to also provide a update for the DEI advisory group. We, in the past few weeks, have approved a definition for equity, diversity, and inclusion. And if you'll remember, that was something to help everybody start from the same field of understanding so that we can move from there to continue on. We also are moving forward towards work that we want to prioritize and accomplish, and so doing group sessions to work on that. And if I'm missing anything else, looking forward to the next few meetings on that. I do want to also acknowledge the Pumpkin Patch Parade and the Maywood Fine Arts and the parade promoted equity in the arts. I appreciate President Adushi being there and Trustee Brennan. There were hundreds of parade goers, and we ended up at Keystone Park, and it was just a fun time. And as Trustee Jones and Maywood said, you walk from Maywood Fine Arts to Keystone Park, and you don't realize just how short of a walk it is and how close of neighbors we actually are. And so I think that that is meaningful in the way we are building that relationship. I do want to also mention Halloween and just note that in our packet today, we got a report that there are, I think, 55 new cases in September on COVID in River Forest. And so we are still living with this. I highly suggest people, I know it's outside, but for those kids who are 11 and under, to be wearing masks and just to be safe and have your hand sanitizer and have fun.
Thank you. Great reminder. Okay, just a few things. Just to emphasize what Erica said about Halloween and remind all of our residents that it is on Sunday from 3 to 7. And if anybody has any questions, you know, they can feel free to call the village staff and we'll be happy to talk you through some of the protocols. As Erica mentioned, you know, we are emphasizing mask wearing, it's required. We're also emphasizing staying safe, cleansing your hands and ensuring that, you know, everyone's safe. And it is a time for small kids to enjoy Halloween, and we want everyone to enjoy Halloween, but we want to do it safely. Okay, we did have, as Erica and Katie mentioned, and we had a neighboring, wonderful neighboring community event with Maywood. We actually had two this month. It started out with Tour de Proviso, which was a bike ride starting in Broadview. Mayor Thompson from Broadview hosted it, but it encompassed it, many of us. It started out in Broadview, went through Bellwood with Mayor Harvey, went through Maywood with Mayor Booker, and then kind of came through and ended up in River Forest, and we gave them a great warm welcome. And I want to thank the staff who made it pleasant and warm and welcoming to our community. We had several residents actually join the ride. It was just a little over 7 miles. It was quite fun. It was a beautiful day. So I want to thank all the mayors and all the residents that participated in it. The second one, like I said, Imagine More. I was honored to stand with Mayor Booker from Maywood on the platform, along with Commissioner Kargi, and I missed you I think, by just seconds, Trustee Bidner.
I was making sure that everything on the riverfront side was working.
So my apologies for missing a little bit of your speech, but I really enjoyed kicking off that event. There was many residents from River Forest, so that was quite nice to see everybody. And as you said, Erica, it's not very far. I appreciate the and honored to be part of that, and certainly Maywood Fine Arts is a great organization. I think you mentioned Age Friendly. I chaired that meeting for an hour and a half. It was a good, if you ever get a chance and you're interested in Age Friendly initiatives or issues, you know, the audio is great. There's a lot of great presentation material that, you know, that is provided, and a lot of thought went behind a lot of these presentations about how to welcome and be more inclusive of our older adults. And we often not think about them, but they're very important. So I think that's it. I think those are my, what I did. So we'll move on. Okay, so let's move on to the consent agenda. If I can get a motion to approve items A through N.
Can I ask that we pull two items? Do we do that now before he's
good? Want to pull
items? Or just separate them? Sure. 5E and 5F. Thank you.
Okay. Motion to approve consent agendas A through D and G through N.
Your second?
Second.
Okay, any questions regarding those items that were moved and seconded? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to read them and then take the vote.
Consent Agenda A, Village Board of Trustee Meeting Minutes, September 27, 2021. B, Village Board of Trustee Executive Meeting Minutes, September 27, 2021. Indigenous Peoples Day Proclamation. Domestic Violence Awareness Month Resolution. Waiver of formal bid due to competitive quotation and award of contract for pump station green electricity at Dynergy Energy Services at a rate of 0.603 cents per kilowatt hour. Authorization to donate surplus property bicycles ordinance. Waiver of formal bids due to an intergovernmental agreement and approval of the service provider contract with Municipal GIS Partners for $42,922. Monthly department reports, member financial report, performance measurement report, accounts payable September 2021, $2,169,218.02. Village administrator's report.
I think what Margie just said is to add it to our newsletter, which I think is a great idea.
Okay.
I don't think that's what I
Vasquez?
Yeah.
Brennan?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
O'Connell?
Yes.
Faulkner?
Yes.
Willis?
Do you want us to take them separately? Other ENF, the consent agenda?
I'm fine either way. We could do it together.
Okay.
Yeah.
So okay. If I can get a motion and a second to do, to move consent agenda ENF, and then we'll talk about it.
Move that we approve consent agenda items 5E and F. I ask that we pull the E because that is the 2021 Climate Action Plan for the Chicago region. And I think that some of the details in this are important enough to have read into the record.
Okay.
So if I may,
yep.
I'd like to read the mitigation targets, the mitigation objectives, the climate adaptation goal, and the adaptation objectives. And I think it's important for residents who are here and who are listening to the streamed version or who listen to the audio tape, and staff who are here, and all of us who are sitting around the table who make decisions to keep these things in mind, because by adopting this resolution, this is what we are going to do, and we must do it. So here we go. The mitigation targets are by 2030 to reduce greenhouse gas emissions 50% from 2005 levels. By 2040, reduce greenhouse gas emissions 65%. And by 2050, reduce greenhouse gas emissions at least 80% from 2005 levels. Our mitigation objectives, which we are agreeing to by adopting this resolution, are to demonstrate leadership to reduce emissions, decarbonize energy sources, optimize building energy, implement green energy policies, decarbonize transportation, reduce vehicle miles traveled, manage water and waste sustainably, and sustain ecosystems to sequester carbon. Our climate adaptation goal is persistent, equitable climate adaptation. And finally, our adaptation objectives, there are five. So the fifth one ends in and. I don't think there's a sixth. I'll read the five. Number one, engage and educate the community about climate resilience and adaptation. Incorporate equity and inclusion into climate adaptation efforts. Collaborate
and build capacity for a more resilient community, enact plans and policies focused on adaptation and resilience, and adapt operations and investments for future climate conditions. So we're committing to build these targets, objectives, and goals into our decisions and discussions at the board table. And I ask residents to hold us accountable.
Can I ask a question? Just was there a reason for 2005? Do we have any idea? Like, is that when they started doing this work?
As a benchmark?
Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Do we have the baseline? Yeah. We do have a baseline because we've been part of Planet Green since 2007. So I don't know if we go back to 2005, but we definitely have it for 2007.
Right.
And the Sustainability Commission has been measuring. This latest update has taken some time because we are actually trying to get the metrics ourselves outside of Planet Green so that we can continually get them, you know, independently. Actually, I heard this evening that Shannon was able to get what she needs, and we do have an updated metric. On top of that, the Mayor's Metropolitan Caucus has a separate team that is working with municipalities on how to enhance their metrics, and they will be giving us help on some of the areas where we've had problems. So, for example, we really don't have a good metric for the train, in terms of the emissions of the train. And so we can now get that working Mayor's Metropolitan Caucus. New resolution is basically something that the Mayor's Metropolitan Caucus is asking all members to adhere to as we work to do a regional climate action plan. You know, they'll be done individually, but kind of come together with the same goals and objectives. At the resol, I don't think the resolution should.
All I had on 5E.
I just want to comment. And first, thank you for pulling decent time. We committed to a climate action plan under your leadership, actually, Katie, when you were the chair of the Sustainability Commission. And so you read through this, the 53 municipalities. We were one of them, and it was because of your leadership during that time. And, you know, as you know, I signed the Chicago Climate Charter back, I remember what day, 2014, 15, I mean, well before anybody even stepped into this, you know, arena of climate change. So, you know, we've done quite a bit, and I was very proud when Eric Simon was here talking about community solar. So that's going to get us into some of these targeted, you know, measuring ourselves against that and hopefully meeting those goals. So thank you for pointing this out. I think this is a wonderful commitment from our parents.
And then the second item that I wanted to pull was 5F. That's the waiver of a formal bid for the street lighting and pumping station. And I just wanted to clarify something in the first paragraph, which reads, the village purchases electricity for its street light system and pumping station, while the power for the village hall and public works garage are provided free of charge by ComEd pursuant to our franchise agreement. And something that I learned maybe about 5 to 7 years ago was that, in fact, while the village doesn't pay these providers for the electricity at Village Hall and Public Works, it's actually paid for by the residents. So it's not provided free of charge. Every resident has a line item on their bill that we pay for the lighting, the electricity at Village Hall and Public Works Garage. And I guess that's a question that I'm sort of asking Jeff, if you can confirm that for me.
As well, we could certainly verify that with our contact at Satori Energy, but that is my
either way, whether we get it through franchise agreements free of charge or they charge us, it still comes out of taxpayers' money.
Right. I just wanted because I think it looks like these ComEd is giving us electricity for free, and that's not accurate.
No, it is taxpayer money, but either way, it's taxpayer. You're right. I mean, it's not written right.
Okay, that's all I had. Thank you.
Well, do you want to rewrite that first paragraph and acknowledge that it's not free of charge, that it is paid, even though we don't pay for it? ComEd.
We certainly can. My only concern with that is the fluctuation of pricing on this. It very rapidly, and so dealing with our contact at Satori, she has encouraged us, assuming approved tonight, to sign the contract immediately and get it back to them. If we want to come back to the board, we can do that. I just don't know where those numbers go from here.
I think this. Could we could do an easy fix.
Yeah.
Maybe rather than saying are provided free of charge by ComEd, we can replace that with something like are shared by village residents or by village taxpayers.
Not free of charge. or you could just take it out. Provided free of charge.
Replace are provided free of charge by ComEd with.
I mean, it's not ComEd paying for it, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And you just strike.
Just strike the whole thing.
Sentence,
that's
right?
What I was going to say, Katie. Just strike the whole thing. Versus trying to.
And then just start the paragraph with Satori Energy.
The next.
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, who moved it and you seconded it? Whoever moved it seconded
it.
You okay with that change?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
Very good.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's easy. All right. So if everyone's okay with that, then I would go ahead and ask the clerk to read it and then take the vote.
Agenda E, resolution endorsing the 2021 Climate Action Plan. Chicago Region Resolution. F, waiver of formal bid due to competitive quotation. Award of the contract for street lighting, green electricity with AEP Energy Inc. at the rate of 4.360 cents per kilowatt hour. Vasquez.
Yes.
Brennan.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
O'Connell.
Yes.
Faulkner.
Yeah.
Trustee.
Yes. Let's move on to 6A. This is the consent item for separate consideration. If I can get a motion and a second.
Motion to approve from general fund to McDonald's Care VDs for
$247. Okay.
I would ask the clerk back.
Consent to agenda item for separate consideration, accounts payable from the general fund to McDonald's Care of EDs for $247.61. Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Move on to item 7A. Bob, if you want to take the podium now and give us your comments.
Hi, my name is Robert Armalis. I live at 1508. I'd like to request the board take firm action tonight. Stop the cut through traffic in the northeast corner of the village. Presently, there are thousands of cars and trucks coming through our neighborhood 24/7. Hopefully, we can all agree our streets are not truck routes or alternate routes for North and Harlem Avenue. Current situation is a black stain. Honestly, it's ruining my River Forest experience. Short and long-term remediation, systemic lack of traffic control, and cut-through drivers in our.
All right, if I can get a motion. Oh, no, this is just seeking consensus, so. Assume that we'll just have Jeff come on up.
So this, as Mr. Armalis had pointed out, on September 15th, the Traffic and Safety Commission met and they heard Mr. Armalis' request along with several other residents regarding traffic in the northeast corner of the village. So northeast corner, basically we're talking about Lathrop to Harlem from North Avenue down to Greenfield. The concerns that were noted included traffic speeds, traffic volumes, the noise associated with the perceived increase in recent traffic, as well as general safety concern with the increased number, increased speed, general lack of respect for the traffic signage that's in. Anecdotally, a lot of people running stop signs, rolling through them. There was also a little bit of discussion regarding parking along Greenfield for Fenwick sporting events, which we can talk about a little bit later. Might have to be separated if we move through or move forward with a study. But the Traffic and Safety Commission heard the issue, public discussion took place, and the commission essentially recommended that a study be performed of that area so that we can figure out, you know, what's the best, most comprehensive way to help stem this issue, whether it be right in, right out, kind of restrictions into or into River Forest or out of River Forest onto North Avenue, as well as Harlem. So at this time, the commission is essentially just recommending that the study be performed.
Jeff, what's the cost of
this? I reached out to the consultants. We're looking somewhere in the ballpark of $10,000 to $15,000.
Is it KLA?
Correct.
Okay.
I want to say, as someone who lives in this quadrant, I really thank Bob for his leadership on this. It has been a increasingly big problem in our area. And so I really thank the residents who emailed in and the Traffic and Safety Committee for proposing this study. There is signage missing, as one of the residents said. There is a lot of avoiding natural traffic flows. There's a lot of commercial vehicles coming down the streets, and they believe they have like their commercial route set. Mm-hmm. You think about and all those businesses down North Avenue. I think comments that were provided to us tonight in our packet talked about weight limits. I think that's very appropriate, and I'm very eager to see what the study will say. As many residents on my block know, we encounter many, many accidents off of Harlem and Lemoyne, and they are off usually because there is somebody who's trying to turn left, and the person in behind them doesn't recognize that, and there's intersection. We have to remember that North Avenue in Harlem is one of the huge intersection for Chicago, and again, thousands of cars pass through that. So I'm really glad that Bob has led this and that he has stuck with this.
Just a quick question. I realize we can do the study, but as far as mitigating anything because of where North is located, do we also have to have input on the other side, or?
Fair question. I don't think we would have to have input from the other side, Elmwood Park being the other side, I assume. You know, some of the potential treatments that we would get into might require IDOT approval because it's IDOT right-of-way, North Avenue. But, you know, certainly something we would communicate to Elmwood Park, but not necessarily something that they would have a, you know.
So, Jeff, is the intent then to study the area that you described?
At this time, yes.
I have a question about at this time, because I've heard complaints about Lemoyne all the way through up to the Thatcher. So I was going to ask, I'm not trying to expand it, but what I'm afraid of, we do this part and then we say, okay, now let's do, you know, west of Lathrop. And so, and Lemoyne is the one I hear about a lot, that it's speeding east-west on Lemoyne. So I guess that what I was asking, Jeff, is who drew the line on Lathrop? And I'm not fighting you. I'm just trying to understand how the lines were drawn.
So that was part of the original discussion that started with Mr. Armalis. You know, several months ago at this point, really. This is the second time this has been at the But the concern seems to be mostly centered around Harlem and North Avenue. And when that area gets congested, that's where you start to see a lot of folks kind of centered around that intersection. So from the onset of this discussion, it has really been kind of discussed, and correct me if I'm wrong, as essentially from Lathrop over to Harlem Avenue. Not to say we couldn't expand that, but that's been the context of this discussion.
It could also be that they've got no right turns after Lathrop.
Ashland Avenue is the first street that you're over that you can turn into River Forest. So, you know, Forest Avenue is right out only. No left turns on.
Right.
There is a little more turn restriction over on that.
I agree with doing the study. And while I was reading the material, I was wondering whether you try to do some mitigation as you're doing the study. For example, do we want police to go and enforce right now while the study's being done, or would that taint the study?
It's a great question. I think right now, until we know whether or not we're going to proceed with the study and until the study were to start, assuming it gets approved, I don't think there's a problem in proceeding with the enforcement that we're doing. Once the study would start or shortly beforehand, I would certainly suggest that we kind of pull back from the temporary enforcement actions just so that we do get a more realistic traffic count, speed, things of that nature. We don't want to change behavior during a study or even right before it. So right now we might still be a ways out. This is a fairly large study, so I don't know what KLOA's schedule even would be for. Certainly as we got much closer and during the study, I would to make sure that we weren't doing anything to change.
Is there a procedural reason why we have to do this study at all? Can't we just act?
So the concern becomes, where do you act, where do you not act? If we do something at one intersection, what does it do to the two adjacent intersections? We've gotten into this boat a few times before in the past, and so we've really tried to kind of take more comprehensive looks like this, especially when we're talking about a more regional issue. This isn't, you know, one particular intersection. This is so the idea of, you know, certainly we could go cul-de-sac every intersection we have, but what does that do to the streets west of Lathrop now? The traffic consultants are really the ones who are experienced enough to know what we need to
studying it is a good idea.
Yeah.
I have a question. How long will it take, like, if we approve it, for them to start? Because I guess I'm building on, again, in terms of having a study that we get good information out, you know, if they start right away.
I'm sorry.
Basically, the question is when will they start? And
oh.
If we do some sort of temporary remediation, again, I think the quicker we can start, the better, and just get it done.
But I think right now we're
going to... That's my point, is don't skew the study if we can get it going, like, right away.
Well, I think, Jeff, what he's looking for, a recommendation to go forward,
yeah.
They bring back a contract on him. Those details will probably be in the contract.
Right. I don't have a schedule at this time because we haven't engaged them for a formal proposal. This was I shot them a quick email and said, hey, what kind of numbers are we talking if we were to engage in this? And
correct.
So that's about all we've got.
No problem.
Okay, Chief's got something.
Now we're in trouble. Now we're in trouble.
Well, no, it's a great point. The study is a great idea.
Yeah.
Thank you, Trustee Brennan. We have been doing ongoing traffic enforcement for probably the past year.
Okay.
Resident here tonight has been in contact with the police department. We've done a combination of enforcement and education over the past year, not at just the one intersection, but we've probably done almost every intersection all the way up to Franklin Avenue. What we've learned during that time is you have cars that ignore the do not enter sign into the area of St. Vincent's property. That go east on, they start somewhere west of Lathrop, and now they're blowing the do not enter sign or barricades right along where kids are going to school. Commercial vehicles, has been pointed out, accidents, speeding. This is a almost like a national phenomenon of driving habits across the United States right now, where signs are being ignored. We have technology for those that use Waze or Google Maps or Apple Maps. They all seem to direct you now down Lemoyne. You're coming down North Avenue. It's backed up to about Franklin, and now they're directing you into River Forest.
Jim, can you do something about that?
Well, we've been writing tickets. We've been doing everything across the board. I don't know if we can educate and enforce our way out of this issue.
Right.
And I think we've seen even the signs that have been at Franklin and at Ashland that are the, I'm sorry, Franklin, is it Franklin and Ashland, and no right-hand turn during certain hours. Park and Franklin, they're just ignored. And it's really what begs for this study is the amounts of violations and ongoing. The second an officer isn't there, they start again. It's what we've ongoing as Commander Greenwood keeps the current list. We probably have a couple dozen ongoing enforcement missions that the officers roll through every day or during the week. And Lemoyne is one of those where we've heard from residents up and down Lemoyne, some on Greenfield. So I think it's a great first step. And once again, I don't think we can enforce or educate our way out of this problem. There's probably going to be something that would come out of a study. And then we're dealing also with different driver habits, friends. I mean, who would think we'd make it on all these apps directing you into Safe River Forest where you can see down Lemoyne or Greenfield. So we appreciate the residents reaching out to us and pointing out the problems they've been seeing. There's a resident that lives right across from St. Vincent's that's extremely concerned about the cars that blow right through the do not enter sign Jackson and Lathrop traffic on point. So anything the board can do and Jeff and his group to do, the police department would.
And we've got two junior police recruits right here.
That is nice.
So we junior recruits.
Thank you. So I just wanted to mention that we are doing ongoing enforcement and that if Jeff decides to stop or do the studies agreed, we have no problem pulling back from those areas so you are getting a count because once they see the police there,
they
pay attention.
You've convinced them.
And if I could just mention one thing that was brought up here, if your comment, we run all the serial numbers several times. We send letters out to those where we've identified the owners. We also, if they have bike stickers where they bought the bike from, let's say Menards in Oak Park or another bike store, we go there and try to track it down to the serial number at the bike store for those that have records. But I do think it is a good idea, and we could do that in the bike and also serial number. All attempts to locate it. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So if there's any questions for Jeff, it sounds like there is consensus.
Yes.
I didn't hear anybody say no. We're not.
The only other thing I do want to throw out, and I think I touched on it earlier, there was the parking along Greenfield for Fenwick events was also discussed at the meeting. The consultant did opine that it would be better. They actually looked at Fenwick's schedule, and based on their schedule, obviously we're heading into fall and winter, there aren't a lot of baseball games going on. So if we were to proceed with this study, we would probably pull that particular element out of it just because we're not going to get realistic numbers right now. And then if we wanted to revisit that again in the spring or summer.
Well, yep. Thank you, Bob. And
yeah.
And residents, it definitely is a cut through.
Yes.
No doubt about it. Okay, very good. It sounds like we've got consensus to move forward to bring it back to us for a vote. So,
thank you, Ms. Armada.
All right, so we've got 8A, which is unfinished business, and this is if I can get a motion to approve the sewer lateral repair reimbursement program, and we'll talk about it.
Okay, I move to approve the sewer lateral repair reimbursement program as proposed.
I second. Okay.
Okay, so as we last discussed at the last meeting, the board had recommended that staff go forward and start to create that subsidy program that we had discussed. We have since done that and are basically just presenting that reimbursement program here to you this evening. I will touch on some of the highlights and some of this, most of this we discussed at the last meeting. But there is one element that I definitely want to bring up. So first and foremost, the ownership of the sewer doesn't change as part of this program. So the home, the property owner still owns from the building all the way up to and including the connection at the main. The ownership at no point changes. Ongoing maintenance remains to be the responsibility of the property owner. So root clearing, televising, anything like that, normal kind of ongoing maintenance is still the responsibility of the property owner. Doesn't change whether you've had portions of work done through this program or have yet to do that. That responsibility will not change. The only qualifying damage that would qualify for this program would be structural issues. So sections of pipe breaking, joints within the pipe separating, or the connection between the lateral and the sewer main out in the street completely separating. So again, things like root clogs, things like that, are not going to be considered part of this, even if they do fall within the footprint of the roadway. The location of the damage itself, staff can't be going out televising everybody's, you know, private lines to see where this damage is occurring, where it's, you know, where it starts, where it stops. So the determination of the damage, or the discovery, I should say, is going to be the responsibility of the property owner. Essentially, they would have to call a plumber or a contractor out, say, we're having issues. This is how we always, almost always find these issues in the first place anyways. But the private contractor would ideally televise the line, would be able to kind of measure out where that damage has occurred and start to establish, okay, we're in the roadway or we're not. And then staff gets involved and says, okay, yes, based on the evidence you've provided, we concur that the damage is within the roadway and would qualify for this program. The repair of the damage must include replacement of the pipe from the main up to the curb line. So if there's one spot of damage in 1 3-foot section of pipe, we're not just changing that section of pipe out with the potential for 5 feet away another issue to happen next year. If there's damage there, we're looking at replacement of that entire sewer lateral from the main up to the curb line, because the idea is that this is a one-time shot. We get in there, we offer the subsidy, the sewer lateral is replaced up to the curb line, and there should be no further issues within the roadway after that.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the reimbursement then only applies from the main to the curb, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. As long as you've already interrupted, I'm going to add on to that or ask another clarification. For number 6, the repair must include replacement of the sewer lateral from the main to the curb. That's if there is a repair. It may not necessarily require a repair. It might be that it became disengaged and you just have to put it back together.
If we're looking at an issue where sections of pipe have separated and the village is offering this subsidy, I would make the determination that the sewer lateral needs to be replaced, because if one section of pipe has separated, you're certainly at an increased, you know, potential for multiple sections of pipe to separate.
If there's a separation, that needs to be repaired.
Yeah. When you repair even a small section,
right. In a big hole, yep.
Correct. That's why you do it all.
Yeah.
I have one more question while we interrupt. Can you?
Sorry, Jeff.
No, you're fine. It's all good questions.
Red started. Let's just.
Yeah, no. That's my fault.
I'll note that.
So you said that the residents have to notify you, which is fine. Are we going to recommend plumbers that or others that do this so they know specifically they can get the right people? And
yeah.
That's a good question. Yeah, and we've run into one of the things that we've run into with this, the lead service replacement program for the water services. That's a little more nuanced, specialized work in terms of directionally boring a water line. That's been a lot tougher to get, you know, a lot of contractors willing and able to do that work. So that has been a challenge, and staff has been contacted multiple times with people having trouble getting quotes for that, and we've had trouble getting people involved. We're certainly still trying to, you know, residents in every way we can. This is going to be a lot easier to get. You have a lot more contractors, even that are licensed in River Forest already, that can go dig on a sewer within the right-of-way. So we'll still continue to point people to our website where we have a list of those that are currently licensed. You know, certainly if anybody calls and asks, we can throw names out there. We're never recommending anybody, but, you know, here's the list kind of thing. So, yes, we're certainly going to be trying to help residents out as much as possible.
So since we're interrupting, I'm going to throw one. The 72-hour thing, you know, I understand and acknowledge what the issue is. You know, we have raw sewage going wherever. Do we get involved or not get involved in that? Is, you know.
Yeah, that's tough. And, you know, staff has discussed that. I don't know what the answer is, to be honest with you. completely remove any sort of time frame from it and just leave things open-ended. By the same token, 72 hours, you know, some of these things are very site-specific. If, you know, the one we last dealt with up on the 14 or 15 row, the pavement was starting to deform. We've got a much more severe issue there. If somebody's televising their line and it's, you know, there's damage maybe under like the curb line, it's under the roadway, but it's off to the edge, you're not going to see as much traffic loading off to the side as you would in the center line. And there's maybe no pavement deforming, but maybe through sewer televising, they've seen some damage and they would qualify for the program. That's far less of a risk to public safety than somewhere where the pavement's already deforming. So it's tough. I don't know where the 72-hour time frame came from initially, but it's tough to try to say one time frame for all of these issues because each one of them is going to be a little bit different. The water leaks, our ordinance requests the same time frame for a water service that's leaking. That makes a little more sense to me because we're actively losing unmetered water and it's a resource that we need to maintain. This is a little bit different. You know, of course, we don't want raw sewage spilling into, you know, gravel under the road or anything like that. But I think the bigger issue here is life safety and public safety and issues with the roadway. And that's just going to be pretty universally.
Is that when these issues are discovered, when residents and the village are working together and making a good faith effort to progress on these types of things, and the enforcement issue doesn't even come. If someone is not doing the right thing, that may be where we have to get a little bit more involved from an enforcement standpoint. But fortunately, residents seem to be as interested in getting this resolved as we are.
Jeff, I've got another question. Parts.
All right.
The first important detail in your memo is the program is only available to residential properties. You've given thought to properties that share residential and commercial.
I would include them in residential. If it's servicing residential properties.
And then a property that has both a mixed use would be eligible for this program.
Right, because we don't want there to be a different impact.
Well, that's all residential. If it's multiple families,
I'm sorry,
all residential.
Mixed use with multifamily.
You're not going to like split it down like, okay, well, the commercial pays this part, residential pays this part, so we're only going to help the residential part.
Yeah, to be honest with you, Trustee Brennan, the reason I skipped that one is because I knew it would be a bigger discussion point. I was going to circle back to it at the end. Staff did discuss it. You know, there are multiple ways to do it. Single family residential only, you know, any kind of residential, everybody, you know, the idea, staff discussed it, and the idea that we at least scaled back from allowing standalone commercial businesses didn't seem to be the intent of this program, so we pulled commercial out of it. To your point, hadn't really considered mixed use, but that's a fair point, and at least it out. We could certainly include that. Maybe the breakdown is different. We could break that out differently, too, in terms of the reason. Maybe the cost gets split 50-50 with commercial here and residential here, and then the subsidy only applies to the residential.
Yeah, property. Whatever the proportion is for that property.
We could certainly do that.
You know, if our intent is to pay for residential, we should just stick with the residential. And it wouldn't be too difficult math to do the proportion.
Oh.
And then the second part of the question was following up on the resident Margie's comment earlier or question earlier, which was about some properties share lateral lines, and I mentioned townhomes. Now that's all residential, so that's not a concern that way, but I have a thought on that.
Yeah, and we were actually, I was just out on a call a couple weeks ago with Mark Xenopoulos right before he left. There were townhomes along Lake Street just west of Edgewood that were experiencing some issues. And one of the challenges they were having wasn't out at the roadway. The issue was where all the lines converge behind their properties into one line and then go out to Lake Street. Problem is that when that development took place, there were no common areas there. Everything's private property, abutting private property, so that main sewer line is actually running through five or six different people's backyards. And different people have flood control systems, different people have elevations in their basins, so some people see backup at different times than others. Everybody's going to come at a problem like this with a different in. And so they were having backup issues, but to try to get everybody together on solving the problem, pitching in together, was difficult for the one homeowner, the poor guy who was the only one experiencing the issue. So in an instance like this, we're still dealing with one location that's not on anybody's property, but you've got maybe 10 properties kind of feeding into. If a resident came to the village and said, $15,000 fix, I've already gotten a quote and it's under the roadway and we, made sure everything was, eligible. As long as a resident or three residents or all 10 residents were willing to foot the other portion of the bill and green light the work, I would imagine the reimbursement from the village goes out just the same. Only just go out to those people obviously paying their. Yeah, certainly something we've.
All right, the only follow-up I would have then is that the two draft agreements that you attached to your proposal, I would recommend that you make it specific in the definition of the parties, that it's a residential property owner, not just property owner. And then also in the reimbursement form on page 184, the same thing. Make it very clear that it's a residential.
Second form you were referring to was, I'm sorry, which form was that?
Page 180, this is the last page of the packet, 184,
the request for reimbursement form?
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks for touching on multi-unit private property. It's always tricky. I also want to just check in with you. You do have on your memo here that some things might be determined on a case-by-case basis, and I'm just want to check in, see what you might be thinking of.
I have no idea.
I wanted to see if there was anything.
And there isn't. This language is consistent with the other two subsidy programs that we have, the lead service line replacement program and the sewer backflow program, and we're trying to keep everything consistent, but also recognizing that each, as we were talking earlier, each of these things is so unique and different sites that there may be something that pops up, and maybe we do talk about it at a staff level and decide, yeah, this still does meet the intent of the program, even though it wasn't specifically hammered out. We still want a little bit of flexibility to try to work with residents if it seems.
The only thing I'd like to add, and it goes to what Margie had asked, and that is the communication of this program. I think it's essential that we really communicate this program. And I mean, I like the caricatureness of, I think something like that, I think, will get people's attention and at least read it. So I think we'll need to spend some time, I guess staff time, to just think about the communication. All right, hearing no other further questions, I'd ask the clerk.
Approval of the sewer lateral subsidy program. Johnson.
Yes.
O'Connell.
Yes.
Faulkner.
Yes.
Gillis.
Yes.
Vasquez.
Yes.
Bennett.
Yes. I appreciate it. Okay, I think that concludes our regular scheduled meeting. We are going to go into executive session. Motion to move into executive session.
Move to enter into executive session to discuss the setting of a price for sale or lease of property owned by the village and the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the village.
Second.
We need to move to adjourn first.
No.
Go into executive session.
No.
The long.
Yeah, that's after. And we come back to open.
Good.
O'Connell.
Yes.
Faulkner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Being adjourned.
Okay. 2 minutes.